It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. And with me right now is Kyle from LaGrange Barber. Hey, Kyle.
What's going on, David?
How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How about yourself?
All right. I still haven't heard anything from the university, so I think we should keep you on the podcast. So
for now, I'm safe for now, still.
We have Bubba Rosenbaum from the western part of from China Grove, Doobie Brothersville. So Bubba, you feeling good tonight?
I'm doing well. Good to be here as always.
We're having fun, and we've got a very special podcast tonight as we're continuing to honor players. And who do we have on tonight?
We have Philip Henry, a wide receiver, of course, under the Skip Holtz era. Philip was a walk-on, had an excellent career, had right at 100 receptions. I believe it was maybe 96, to be exact. But he was certainly a key contributor on those teams early in the Skip Holtz era,
right,
particularly 06 and 07. But then also we're going to have Jay Sunhalter, who's more of a blocking tight end / fullback. He also transferred in, as Philip did. And then and then we're also going to have Brandon Simmons on, who transferred in from Elizabeth City State. So three Skip Holtz era guys and three transfers.
So it's the transfers podcast.
And two guys from Elizabeth City ties, Brandon Simmons from Elizabeth City State and Philip Henry originally from Elizabeth City.
That's true.
Philip Henry, I think of two plays when I think of Philip Henry. Love Philip Henry, first of all. Great wide receiver. But one of the plays, oh, man. UAB 2006. I'm sure you guys remember this play. Bubba, you know which play I'm going with? UAB 2006?
Oh, yeah. Right at the end of the ball game, Philip made a nice catch and run, and then
it's going to be for the win,
got stripped about the 22-yard line, and then I believe it was a touchback, if I recall correctly.
Yep. Yes, it was a nightmare.
Down at Legion Field.
It would have given us the win. And the other play I think of when I think of Philip Henry is just 2005, we were playing at SMU. Philip Henry, I guess, was a freshman, maybe? And we were playing at SMU, and Philip catches – we were backed up at our old goal line, and Philip catches a ball at about the 10, and it was probably his longest touchdown reception of his career. And it's just a little – it may have been a screen pass. I don't remember exactly. But he runs it all the way from around the 10 all the – just down the field for a touchdown. Do y'all remember that play?
Yes.
Dave, remember – Bobby, do you remember that play?
Yeah, I do. I do.
You're waiting
for Bubba? Oh, I'm here. I'm here.
By the way, we're still taking offers on to get Bubba a new cell phone, or at least a cell phone battery. So,
hey, cell phone's good and ready to, it's good to go.
Is it good to go? All right.
Yeah. Bubba does not want your stupid cell phones, people.
He does not want
to. I won't turn down a free cell phone, but
Bubba does.
I'm good to go.
Cell phone. Bubba, I take it back. If you want to give Bubba a cell phone, he will gladly take it.
Yeah, he has the old flip phones since he's had about 12 years, so it's time to upgrade, and so we're going to...
Actually, I confirmed. I said Bubba had a razor. He actually has... It's not even a flip phone. Bubba has a bag phone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's like 25 years old.
Kyle's right. I have the Zach Morris phone.
The Zach Morris phone, Bubba.
That's for you, Zach Morris.
I guess Bubba would know what he has. I'm sorry. I said he had a back phone, but Bubba actually has the giant Zach Morris phone with the antenna you pull out.
Actually, I have one like my dad had back in, I guess, the late 80s, early 90s. He had it mounted in his old 87 Bonneville.
There you go.
Wow. That's kind of the back phone. That's what I'm talking about.
Phone had better reception. So that's a whole.
They did.
That's
why they were popular briefly before they improved the flip phones and the big Zach Morris style phones. When the back phones came out in the early 90s, they were portable. You carry them around. They were in a bag. And they looked goofy, but they had great reception at the time.
Antenna on the car.
Yes, which at the time was a big issue with cell phones. You'd get a hand phone, a flip phone, whatever, and the reception would be terrible. With those bag phones, you could get a good cell service.
Yeah, so that's a good lesson on cell phones and mini ravioli before we, that's where I'm shopping now. So, hey, we're going to go now. Let's go to the Philip. Let's go to Philip Henry before we get way off track, and we'll come back right after the interview. Well, we have one great player to another after another, and here we are with right now Philip Henry, who is a great wide receiver for the Pirates. And Philip, thank you so much for. I know you're a bit man. You're a busy man. Appreciate you spending some time with us tonight here on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Wanted to talk about your story. Every story, every guy is different on the team, and that's what it makes us so special, as we're finding out tonight. I wanted to, you actually, my memory serves me right, you were actually a transfer, right, from Elizabeth City State. Isn't that how it went for you?
Yeah, I transferred, came from Elizabeth City State, but that really was like the school that I went to right before I came to ECU. Before that, I was at Shaw University for a year. I had to go to Elizabeth City State to finish up some hours, because some of my hours didn't transfer at the time. So that was actually the last school that I went to, yeah, but I really spent the whole year at Shaw University before that.
You know what? I never – that's why I'm doing this show. I've been finding out so much about the players. I didn't know that, so that's always great. You had a tremendous career, I felt like, with the Pirates, and you had time with – I wanted to ask you about Coach Holtz. What was it like playing for him?
Oh, Holtz was a very – he was one of those coaches that was all about, like, everybody compete. You know, when he came in, I really had an opportunity to, like – he told everybody that we had a chance to, like, have a clean slate, because I was a part of the team the year before and sat out as a walk-on in a red shirt. And at that time, once Coach Thompson got fired from the team, you know, I really didn't know if I was going to even have a chance to be on the team. Like, because sometimes when coaches come over, you know, they don't keep walk-ons. Sometimes they have new tryouts. And it would have been a chance for me to actually not even be on that team. But when he said that everybody was going to have a clean slate, I could have took that one of two ways. You know, I could have been like, man, I've been here the whole year, set out. Now I got to go with a new staff, prove myself all over again. Or I could have been like, you know, the new staff coming in, he's probably going to go with the guys that was there before. Because he gave us the opportunity to have a clean slate, I took that and I just ran with it, man. So he was one of those guys that gives you that opportunity as long as you can play. And I was appreciative of that.
For people that don't know, explain, can you give us like an idea, what's it like for somebody to come on and walk on the team? Can you just like is there like tryouts, right, to just to be a walk-on, just to be on the team, right?
Yeah, well, for me, it might be different now, but at the time, you know, I had heard about, you know, there was some interest in me at ECU while I was at Shaw towards the end of that spring semester. And we had like a coaching change that happened at Shaw at that time. And the new coach came in and told us that he didn't want any receivers that was, like, under 6 foot. So I was like, man, I might have to see if I can go somewhere else. But I really had already been there for a year, so I wanted to prove myself and get on the field because I knew I could play out there. And we played in our spring game out there, and I had, like, a couple touchdowns. But I knew my rapport with the new coaches wasn't that great. So I just took a chance. And when I got to ECU, it was, like, one day before classes started, I heard about the tryouts. And they had, like, I looked up online, and they had, like, a night practice before the tryout. And I went to that night practice and just watched the team practice that I felt like I was going to be a part of. And I was, like, the only one out there that was trying out. There was a lot of people that said they was going to try out, but none of them came to that practice before. I snuck on the field, was on the sideline watching. That's when I saw Chris Johnson for the first time. I called my brother immediately and was like, this is the fastest dude I've ever seen in my life. And that was, like, 04, and a lot of people wasn't even – hip to that yet. Like, they didn't know, but they found out soon once he played in that Wake Forest game how fast he really was. But I called my brother that night and said, this dude is so fast. And then I was seeing a lot of other wide receivers that were, like, tall and big, and I almost had some doubts on myself, like, I might not even be able to compete with these dudes. But when you're walking on, you kind of got to be super confident. And so, you know, I had a lot of encouragement from people around me because I was a pretty good player in high school. I just was always small. And I just went after it. You know, when we tried out, it was only like 35 people there, I feel like. And I feel like 20 of them went to the DB section. And it was only a few of us as wide receivers. And we were catching passes from the wide receivers coach and like quarterbacks coach. We didn't even catch passes from like the players that were actually on the team. and he threw me like a low pass. I went down and caught it. I felt like I had a good chance of making it once I made that catch because the coach was like, good catch. And then eventually I made it, man. It's a lot more that went on to it, but, you know, I'll keep it short for you, but it was a lot more that went on to it. Like, I almost felt like they wasn't even going to pick me. They came in when it was the day for people to get picked, and he was like, stand up when I point to you. And he pointed in my direction, and I just stood right up. And the guy behind me stood up, and he was like, everybody that's standing up, you made a team. And me and this guy was just looking at each other like, are you talking to me or are you talking to him? Like, who is it? But at that point, I had did so much. Like, I was going to do anything to get on that team, and it just worked out for me.
It sounds like the, you know, what's funny is a lot of people think you have to really shine, you know, the game day, which that's true, but you really have to shine even before you had, I know, a lot of probably, I'm assuming, working out and a whole bunch of stuff you did even before you did the tryouts, and then from there you had a whole bunch of stuff that's really cool. I wanted to ask you about, are there certain games or memories of being or hanging out with the guys, or certain memories you had that really stand out? This is what tonight's all about, to honor the great players that we've had in the past, and there's going to be other ones in the future that we can honor as well.
Man, so many. I'm trying to something that probably people won't know about. It was like going into our 2006 season during camp. We were standing in Scott. We were there before the students, obviously. And, like, none of the coaches were around. Or if they were around, we didn't know where they were. And we had, like, a certain curfew we were supposed to be in. And it was players that was deciding that they wanted to go somewhere. They knew they couldn't do it because you get caught, get in trouble, and you might get kicked off. That was something that I wasn't even thinking about because I'm going to walk on already. I'm like, they're going to cut me for any little thing. I ain't got time. But so we just had to find, like, you know, things to do to make ourselves, you know, to entertain ourselves. So a lot of guys will play video games, stuff like that. But at one point, all of us came outside of the dorms, and you can, like in Scott, in the inside, it used to be where you can, like, hang out outside of the doorway and just kind of see people that's standing across on the other side. And we just stood outside. One side was, like, offense, the other side was defense, and we really literally had like a freestyle battle between each other because everybody used to watch freestyle battles on YouTube back then.
Yeah.
So you had Andre Allison, CJ, all the different players were like giving bars to the other side, like defense versus offense, and it was great. Then coaches found out we was out there because we was being loud and we had to go inside, but that was a good time, a memory that people probably don't remember. We did a lot of things in the locker room too that's going to stay locker room talk. I feel like we'll have to talk about that off the show, but that and just game-wise, I mean, so many games. I think I'd say 2006 when we played West Virginia at home, we almost won that game. That was a big-time game for us as a program. We realized at that point, I think even though we lost that, we had something. We had opportunity to really, you know, try to go to a bowl game and change some things at ECU at that time because some years prior, it was tough. They hadn't won that many games. And coming in with a new coach, we got certain players, but you know, all you really have is the ECU fans behind you and each other. We came and played West Virginia at home, and they did beat us, but we felt like we were good enough. That was a big game. 07, the next year going into Virginia Tech after the tragedy, that was also a big game. If you go back and listen to that broadcast, you know, obviously lives being lost and things like that is way more important than any game. But we were playing well in that game. We had some unfortunate incidents that happened with our quarterback. And, like, right before we ended up having to play another quarterback, we felt like he did a pretty good job until he, you know, had some unfortunate things happen in that second half. We threw a pick six. And we ended up losing that game because of other things, too. But we also knew that year that we could do something once we went into Virginia Tech and played them that tough. And they had a lot of defensive guys that went to the NFL from that team. So the rest of that year was, like, I think one of the best years for ECU history. You know, 2007, we went on to play Hawaii Bowl and beat Boise State. We went out there knowing we were going to win that game. Everybody else didn't think we was. And we just kind of proved ourselves that whole year. So I felt like if you just look at that roster, that's one of the best rosters to me. I know I'm being biased about it because I was on it, but you look player for player, man. There was so many good players on that 07 team. Then, of course, the next few years, once I was gone, they won the conference and beat West Virginia, beat Virginia Tech. These were all things that we felt like we could do anyway, and they just kind of took it and ran with it. So it was great.
You know, I was at that, speaking of that Virginia Tech game, the East Carolina, I want to give a shout-out to the Pirates because the university gave Virginia Tech $100,000. And I don't know if you remember before the game, the pregame, the actual students and the fans on one side said thank you, another said aside did pirates, thank you, pirates, thank you, pirates.
Yeah.
It was a very touching moment because I was walking through the campus to get to Lane Stadium, and I'll never forget that day. It was very eerie walking through there knowing that back in April of that year, this was September, Labor Day weekend, I believe, that a madman had gone and killed professors and students on that beautiful campus. And it was just one of those moments. In fact, that was the day when we're walking back after, unfortunately, we lost the game, that Appalachian State beat Michigan in the Big House. And
yeah.
We were like shocked. We're like, what in the world is going on for a college football for Appalachian State to do that? But it was a special day. I wish we could have pulled it off. But you're right, that season was huge for the Pirates.
Yeah, we definitely felt like that could have been us, like, on the TV screens. So beating Virginia Tech at that time, like, we were a lot of us were disappointed after that game. But we knew we could beat that team. They were a good team that year, obviously. But we felt like we could beat them. We prepared for them the whole time, and it just was a tough second half. But that beginning of that game, I've never been the chills I felt before that game, because just looking as they're doing the national anthem and seeing people in the crowd that's crying, you know they're crying because of the tragedy. It was tough just to even go through that and then have to go out and play in a game. You really realize, like, what's important for real.
I remember, and I'll just say this publicly, I remember having friends that said, oh, my God, you're going to that game? They're like, the Pirates were going to get blown out of that game. And I said, no way, man. I'm telling you, we've got a good team this year. And even though the tragedy happened, and not knocking that by any stretch of the imagination, it's a terrible thing, we still have a good team, and they're going to go there and play regardless. They're not going to lay down just because of tragedy that happened back in the spring. They're going out there and giving their best, and it was a good game. I hate we didn't, like I said, we didn't win it.
Yeah, most hostile environment I've ever been in still to this day. Like, that was a crazy environment. I felt like after the game we needed to, like, help people or something, but we had to go back.
I wanted to ask you about what you're up to now. I know now being in 2018, you're a very busy man. Tell us what you're doing now.
I work in a higher ed. I work actually at NC State in the engineering department. There, so I've been doing that for the last few years, and I have a podcast, sports podcast called the PH Podcast. You can check that out on all the platforms, on my Facebook, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and on July 4th, I'm going to drop this podcast series that's going to be once a week. It's called HELP, and it stands for Help Everyone Live Peaceful, and it's like 2 minutes or less where I'm just talking about, you know, some basic things that happen and some different perspectives that you can have on certain things that can help a person out. So just being busy with that and, you know, still watching sports and trying to be involved as much as I can, because I was a fan before I ever started playing. So, you know, I got a lot of friends who, after we played, they don't watch that much sports anymore, but I still watch it and enjoy it.
You're also on the sports bar with Clip Brock, right?
Yeah, I do the sports bar with Clip Brock sometimes. Yeah, he's a definitely contributor to his show as well.
You're like I said, you're very busy. We love Clip Brock and Pirate Radio, and for all they do for ECU and the Pirates. Philip, I tell you what, man, you're awesome, and I appreciate you spending time with us. We could, you're always welcome on this podcast, and I want to know all the Pirate players that we have something special here across the board. Tell me another school that has the media attention, that has Pirate Nation, that has the fan base and the stadium and everything, the atmosphere that we have, and we're very, very lucky to have players like you. So thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. Anytime, I'll come on, and definitely during the season, and we can talk some sports. That'll be great.
Guys, what a great guy. He actually is a great broadcaster, does a lot for, I know, Clip Rock and Pirate Radio, and wants to keep doing broadcasting. So he's welcome. He's a Pirate. He's welcome on this show anytime he wants, right?
Absolutely. I love Philip Henry. Tremendous talent. Great at what he does. Great in broadcasting. Was a great wide receiver here. And I hear he actually has an iPhone X.
There you go. So, Bubba C, you got to be like Philip Henry. Did we lose Bubba?
Right along there, David.
I don't know. We must have lost. Did we lose Bubba?
We lose Bubba.
Hello, Bubba.
This is podcast gold right here. Bubba, what happened? Was there an emergency?
I guess we need a better tower in China Grove, maybe.
but it's
not my cell phone. I assure you that
it's not a cell phone. We cannot confirm or deny those rumors that It's not his cell phone, or is his cell phone? China Grove evidently has.
It's what you get when you have a couple of young kids. It's tough to find a spot to do the podcast sometimes. You gotta lock yourself in the car.
Bubba's locking himself in the car, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Oh God, help us! We're doing so great. This is great. I'm going to submit this to the podcasting awards for sure.
Yes.
What do we have up next, Bubba?
Jay Sunhalter. Jay, like I said, he started his career after, I believe it was Wakefield High School. He played four sports at Wakefield and then attended Wingate University before transferring to ECU. He actually transferred to ECU in the John Thompson era and had to sit out. And then, of course, became eligible under Holtz and earned his spot on the team and had a nice career, even though he wasn't much of a receiving tight end, didn't have the ball thrown his way a whole lot. What stands out to me, I remember the touchdown reception he had for our first score in that 2006 win at NC State that really pushed us over the edge as far as going to the PapaJohns.com bowl and going 7-5 that year. And then the next thing that comes to mind is just when I was doing my internship at ECU under Tom McClellan, I had the opportunity to get to know Jay and have become closer friends since then. He was sweet mates at Scott Hall that summer with my good friend Britt Johnson.
Anyway, let's go to the interview now with Jay Sunhalter. The Pirate Football Nostalgia Party, and right now we're with Jay Sunhalter. Jay, thank you so much for being with us. It's a huge honor to have you on tonight as we honor the players.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Thank you so much for having me, but thank you so much for everything you do. This is awesome. Awesome deal you're running.
Well, we want to do something special. We've had a lot of stuff going on with the program over the last couple of years, which that's not what tonight is all about. It's to actually honor the players and do something positive. And I wanted to have you on because you have a unique story, your path to the Pirates. You started out in Raleigh at, I believe it was Wakefield High School. And I wanted to ask you about that experience first. But I know you actually, some people may know, I believe you were a four-star athlete right there at Wakefield.
I don't know if I was four-star. I played four sports when I was there. So I did football, basketball, baseball, and track. And I ended up doing track my senior year to work out for football, to get ready for college football. I actually didn't play football until my senior year of high school. So I was also always kind of a baseball and basketball guy. And our high school coach was Steve Rivers, which was Philip Rivers' father. And Wakefield was a new school. So it was one of those situations where I'd always played other sports and I just didn't want to regret never playing football. So I decided to go out my senior year the coaches and Coach Rivers kind of, you know, nudged me that way, and I definitely wanted to do it, and it was the greatest decision, greatest experience of my, you know, my high school time, making that decision to play football. And I love football, had an amazing coach and just great support, and at that point I knew, like, I wanted to play football in college, but I'd only played that one year, so I actually ended up having to walk on. I went to Wingate University, which is a Division II school. I played the season there, and then after that first true freshman season, I transferred that winter to East Carolina and walked on. So that's kind of how I came to ECU. So it wasn't necessarily the conventional path, but it all worked out in the end.
It really did. And you were actually with two different coaches with the Pirates. What was your experience like with, I believe you were with John Thompson first, right?
Yeah, so I came in at John Thompson during the John Thompson couple years there, and then played for Coach Holtz. But with Coach Thompson, he was always very nice to me and gracious to me. But, you know, to be honest, I was coming in as a walk-on, and they didn't necessarily want me. You know, I kind of chose ECU, and I had to go through the tryout phase and kind of go through that aspect of being a walk-on and not really having much given to you and having to earn everything and kind of just go through those battles of earning respect. And, you know, it was very, honestly, it was very tough. And, you know, there was a lot of transition going on at that program because we weren't very successful at that time. But, you know, it taught me a lot of lessons about controlling what you can control, doing your best, keeping a positive attitude no matter what. And, you know, eventually after a year, Coach Holtz came in. And then at that point, you know, everything was kind of a clean slate. And then after Coach Thompson's year, that's when I was redshirting. So I was ineligible to play. And then when Coach Holtz came in, that was the first season where I was eligible. So when Coach Holtz came in, you know, obviously the tide turned and the program turned around. And I, that first year, I was played mostly special teams, a backup tight end. And then I moved into more of my junior and senior year, moved into, you know, special teams and starting at tight end and fullback. But it was just a great experience overall, just to, you know, play at the college level and kind of fill out a dream. But also to just, our fans were awesome. The players were awesome. Coaches were great. I mean, it's just special memories from my time at ECU.
Jay, the question I've always wanted to ask a player, and I guess it's perfect right now, is what were the differences that you saw between the John Thompson regime, if you will, and Skip Holtz?
Yeah, well, I wasn't there because Coach Thompson was there for 2 years, so right. I missed the first year, right. But I came in during that second year, and I'll tell you, I Coach Thompson was always fine with me, but you know, there was some assistants, coaches that I think the staff with Coach Thompson was very new and very green, and that makes a big difference. And when Coach Holtz came in, the assistant coaches were awesome. They were great. And Coach Holtz, you know, came in and he was like the CEO type, and the discipline changed, and, you know, they had a plan to get the program back on its feet and going in the right direction. And, you know, with Coach Thompson's staff, they recruited some really good players. I mean, Chris Johnson came in during his time and some other really good players. It just, you know, there were some good assistants as well on that staff, but it just seemed like when Coach Holtz came in, there was a plan and there was an organization and a, you know, how and a why we need to do certain things to get to the winning level.
In fact, I was told, one of the assistants I know, which I will keep her name nameless, but he told me that they were having to walk players to class because people were not even going to class under John Thompson. So
yeah, yeah. There was a lot of disorganization, and you know, for me coming in, I didn't really, you know, I was pretty new to football still. That was really only my second year of playing, so I didn't know what to expect or, you know, what was normal or whatever, but there was disorganization and, you know, just didn't have the feel. Like it's one of those things where you kind of just know or you don't know. And when Coach Holtz came in, you're like, okay, we know we're going to win. Like we know things are going to get back on track. But during the Thompson era, it was just like, there was a lot of disorganization and just guys not being disciplined. And also too, you know, again, I think the assistant coach aspect was a factor. There's some good ones, but there's also some assistants that were new, and that plays a big part in it.
I know that you had a big touchdown catch. I believe it was against NC State. That memory comes to mind.
My junior year, we played NC State, and, you know, obviously one of our biggest rivals, and we wanted to beat them bad, and it ended up being we beat them, and it was the last game for Chuck Amato. So we had a big win in Raleigh, but we had a successful season. That's the year we went to the Papa John's Bowl. So that was the year we got it back under Coach Holtz's second year, and we finished with 7 wins, I believe. But we went up to Raleigh and beat them. And, I mean, they had a ton of talent on their team, a ton of talent, great players. But so I scored a touchdown, but I actually ended up breaking my leg later in that game. So, yeah, so it was a great memory. I'm from Raleigh, you know, so I have all my family there. So it was something, you know, special for me, something I'll always remember.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you some memories. One thing I'll tell you about the that game that stands out, I was at that game, and one of my buddies, and it was funny because as a fan, some of the media fan in the stands. It was actually, they were actually NC State fans that said we should fire Amato and hire Skip Holtz. And I thought that was really interesting. Never would you think you would be at a football game that you would ever hear that the opposing coach, we want to hire him and fire the current head coach of that team. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is funny because they, you know, it's funny because those NC State fans, you know, Amato, I know they were kind of down on him there. They ended up firing him, but, you know, he's the coach that kind of brought them up and brought them a lot of good years. But I remember that. I mean, I remember, you know, the NC State fans saying that and also UNC fans saying that also to a degree. So they're trying to, you know, they're trying to steal our coach.
Also, I remember a funny story. I had some friends that had the Pirates had played down in Alabama in Birmingham in the late 90s and 97. And I had some friends. I should have gone, and I regret not going to that game. But anyway, they that's another show for a different time with that particular game. But anyway, they were telling me, oh, man, Legion Field is a dump. It's bad. I said, oh, it can't be that bad. I went down there for the PapaJohns.com Bowl.
Yeah.
And it was so bad. I will tell you how bad the neighborhood is.
Yeah.
We normally tailgate and have a bunch of stuff. My buddy and I were like, we'll just get some pizza at the stadium. That particular neighborhood is so bad that they wouldn't deliver pizza. So we had
food.
And then there was a guy there. They only had one concession stand open. And there was a guy on a cardboard table selling liquor. And I just always thought that was hilarious.
Wow.
But that was my...
Well, they didn't serve pizza down there either. I mean, they didn't serve Papa John's pizza, right?
No.
Yeah, that's what I could have believed. It was a PapaJohns.com Bowl, and there was no Papa John's pizza.
What is it? My understanding is what happened with the Birmingham Bowl, and they got that sponsor late. But I just thought that was really odd that the title sponsor, they had nothing there. The other thing that was bad because of a television product for ESPN, I believe it was.
Right,
They had the fans on both sides. I mean, on one side for television, as you know, and they had South Florida fans. They had the USF fans first, and then we had to walk by them. So every time we walked by them, we had to get heckled. I'm like, I don't like this at all. But
Well, their fans weren't. You know, some fans are like nice or good, and some fans are kind of, you know, bad or boisterous. And I remember their fans. I just remember their fans didn't seem to be the nice ones.
Yeah. Anyway, there was I was disappointed we lost that game. However, Coach Holtz, of course, turned the program around, and you were part of that, which we were greatly appreciative of. And I want to ask you, looking forward to now, tell folks what you're doing now.
Yeah, so now I live back in Raleigh, and my normal job is I do sales eye doctor. So my company creates the laboratory, makes the lenses and the products for eyeglasses. So calling eye doctors, but also too, I miss football. I miss sports so much. And actually after I finished playing, I got involved in the broadcasting. So I've worked in that for about 9 years now. And I've worked down in East Carolina, done pregame and postgame show for 94.3 The Game.
Right.
And also, I call games. I've called J.H. Rose High School games. And then I've been doing ESPN3 games for Big South. And actually, it's funny you said UAB. I actually did a game down at UAB last year, at UAB Coastal Carolina. So anyways, I stayed involved calling games, doing the ECU pregame, postgame, and J.H. Rose for 94.3 The Game, and then also doing the broadcast for ESPN3 and a couple other networks. So it's been so much fun to stay involved, and just I miss football so much. But it's kind of interesting because you look at it from a different view. You know, you look at it more from the coach's view and diagnosing plays and telling everybody what's going on. But also, too, it's fun because, you know, during the week you're studying your opponent when you're playing. You're studying your opponent, what they do, and how to win. And broadcasting, you know, you're not really figuring out how to win, but you're studying the game almost like a player because you've got to know it so you can describe it, and you've got to know all the facts, know the players, know everything. Otherwise, you know, if you get on air and don't know what you're talking about, it'll be evident. So it's kind of neat because it's almost like a game week in itself. You're just not playing, but you're studying with your team and the broadcast, you know, your partner and the whole team on the broadcast. It really is like, you know, it's like your own team. And that's what I enjoy. And, you know, never will replace playing, but it's really, you know, it's a really fun experience to stay involved and stay close to the game.
Wanted to ask you too. Have you ever one question? Listening to you for years, doing the pre and post game. Do you ever want to do coaching?
Yeah, I'll tell you. That's what I wanted to do, or that's something I was interested in doing when I got out of school, and something, you know, I still have interest in doing now. And yeah, like yes, I want to. I miss being on the field, and I think I would enjoy it so much, and I think I'd be good at it just because, you know, I want to help people, and I want to help players because, you know, having played and, you know, going through different coaches, you see what you like, what you don't like, and what affected you in a positive way. And, you know, those kind of those learnings, good and bad, you'd want to help other people and help players. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I haven't gotten into it just because when I got out of school, I was still kind of working on some NFL stuff, trying to make that work. And then, you know, then I got a regular job and got into broadcasting. But if there was an opportunity that came open, you know, that's something that I would love to do. So at some point.
Well, I tell you what, love to have you at East Carolina. Don't want you to be on the opposing teams. you could get the job would be awesome. And I know where your heart is, definitely with the Pirates.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's ECU. The people are the best. You know, it's all about the people and the fans, the players, the coaches, everybody's been so, so great to me. And, you know, I hope I've, you know, been great to them just as far as being a friend and doing the best I can out on the field. But we really do have a special place. And what you're doing, you know, on this show, you know, just shows you how much passion and how much people care. And, you know, I know I really appreciate it. I know everybody else does too.
Well, I tell you what, Jay, we definitely do. And again, with everything that's been going on off the field and definitely on the field as well, we wanted to do something special, and it's special to have you on. And thank you so much, and good luck this season with everything you've got going on. And I guess go out there and get some more sales, right, for the iDoc.
Yeah, we always have to close. We gotta. That's what I learned in football. We always have to finish the drill, or, you know, in sales, you gotta close. But yeah, thanks so much, Dave. I appreciate it, and yeah, I'm ready for the season to start.
How about that? He's a great time broadcaster for, I know he's done a lot of work for Henry Hinton and 94.3 The Game. He does a great job with them. Working with my good buddy, Patrick Johnson. And I've known Patrick for, gosh, 20 years. Patrick's awesome. PJ, going to give a shout out to PJ. And he's doing a lot of work on ESPN3. So what, with the Big South, Bubba?
Yep, the Big South. He does. Of course, well, Liberty's moving up to FBS this year, but he did Liberty games in the past, Campbell, Coastal Carolina, those teams. But then he does some other games as well. I know he said he had done UAB and some CUSA games. So,
well, good
so
for
a combination, of FCS and lower G5 games.
That's still big time getting to work for ESPN and call FBS and FCS football games. So good for Jay. And earlier, Bubba mentioned his touchdown reception in that NC State game, and I wanted to say the second half of that game with NC State is one of the most physical football games I've ever seen in my life. You guys remember how physical that game was?
Oh my gosh, yeah, they were. I was at that game, and I'll never forget. I had my I was coaching at the time, and my coach's pass got me and a buddy in to the game, and they put us in the, I think it was the NC State band section, and I'll never forget there were some NC State folks there, and I'll never forget this. It was actually Chuck Amato's last game as a coach for NC State.
Indeed, yes, it was.
And it was so funny because everybody there, because of Lou Holtz's connection of, you know, coaching in NC State, there were NC State fans that were saying, we need to fire Amato and get Skip Holtz. And I just thought that was kind of funny because how many times are you at a game where the opposing coach, you want them as your coach?
So, that's happened quite a few times to me in recent history. But I tell you what, that Skip was too professional. You know, a lot of people will say Skip was always looking for the next job. He was. That's true. But Skip would have never done that. That's burning bridges. You leave East Carolina for NC State, you just burned a bridge. And Skip,
yeah, that's not going to happen. Yeah, I agree with that. But anyway, that was that was an awesome game, and not if you're a State fan, but it was awesome for those of us that are Tiger fans. And I tell you what, guys, I'm excited about our next guest. He being from Elizabeth City State, and he comes to East Carolina, another transfer. And I have a thing for transfers because I was a transfer.
Him and his brother both came to East Carolina, actually.
That's right. Yeah. They're both transfers. Travis, which we also talked to as well.
Actually, Jason Simmons. Jason Simmons.
Jason Simmons?
Yes, yeah. Jason Simmons.
Anyway, so we had a chance to sit down and talk to Brandon Simmons, and let's do that interview right now. Part of the Pirate Football Nostalgia Party, another great player. We have Brandon Simmons with us now. Brandon, thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Absolutely. We're honoring Pirate players tonight, a very special night, a lot of great memories, and kind of like a football player reunion, if you will, and we wanted to give your chance to tell your story. I know that you didn't start out, if my memory serves me right, you didn't start out with the Pirates, kind of like me. I spent my first year at another small college in the mountains, Lees McRae, and I transferred in my sophomore year. Tell everybody your story. How did you become a Pirate?
Yeah, certainly. And like I said, I appreciate the invitation. But, yeah, I started off at Elizabeth City State University. Both myself and my brother started off at Elizabeth City State University. Well, and again, we were very appreciative of the opportunity, but one day we decided to watch the I want to say it was the Sugar Bowl where it was West Virginia versus Georgia, and after watching that game, we both made a decision that you know, we want to play on a bigger stage. And we saw that Coach Holtz was emerging at ECU, and he was looking for some of the better players in the state. And we just viewed it as an opportunity to, you know, participate or to try our skills out. And we were very appreciative of him opening up the door for us to contribute to the Pirates.
And what was he's one of my all-time favorites. He is still a great person. What did you think about playing for Coach Holtz? That was a nice segue, and that was one of the questions I had for you.
Yeah. Well, Coach Holtz, you know, and again with him, the first thing that I noticed was that he was detail-oriented. He really presented us with a winning game plan. Every single day, he communicated with our coaches, and our coaches would communicate with us. He believed in fundamentals. You know, everything was detail oriented. He was buttoned up. Every meeting was expected to start on time. Every hat placement, every hand placement, every foot placement was expected to be consistent every single time.
I remember one of the funniest, not funny, but the thing I'd never thought about is that he made you guys learn the alma mater, and I had never taken the time, and I'm ashamed to admit that until Coach Holtz came. I learned the alma mater in, I think, in 2005 when he got here, late 2004. When I heard the story about the players, I was so embarrassed. I didn't know it. Did he make you guys do that in football meetings?
Yeah, absolutely. So a part of joining the team was the final dot for joining the team was learning the fight song. And what he would do was he would ask all new program members to learn the fight song. And you was expected to present or you were expected to sing the fight song in front of the whole team. And if you successfully pass, more often than not, your teammates will root for you. But if you mess up on one word, more often than not, they'll boo you off the stage and he'll give you another opportunity to try again.
Wow, and I remember that very well. And another thing I remember about early on with Coach Holtz is he didn't have your name on the back of the jersey because you guys were a team. Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's something that he learned from his father. And if football historians really want to take it back, you can simply go back to Notre Dame and relive the Lou Holtz era. And on the back of their jerseys, guess what? It was the same thing. You didn't see any names. And he also, Lou Holtz also took that same philosophy with him to South Carolina. And again, his teams didn't have the names on the back of their jerseys. And Pete Carroll, who also learned from Coach Holtz at Southern California, as you may or may not notice, his teams didn't have the names on the back of their jerseys as well. So it was an easy sell for us. At the end of the day, we believed in one another. We all wanted to be successful. And with that being said, if that was a part of the plan to win championships, we were all for it.
Elizabeth City State is I've actually taken classes there. I like it a lot. It's a diamond in the rough. In fact, they have, by the way, people listening right now, they actually have where tuition's only $500 for Western Carolina and Elizabeth City State, two of our sister schools. So if you're looking for a great university, highly recommend that. Some people getting scholarships are getting paid to go to college right now. That's a whole other show. Wanted to ask you, what were the differences you saw when you were at Elizabeth City State? And you and I have a similar experience of being a student transferring from one place, a smaller place, and coming to a big university. What was it like?
Well, for us, the biggest difference. All right, so for us, since my brother and I both went to a small high school, it was an easy transition for us. We went to Hopkin High School, which is in Sampson County, and that's a small school. Well, when we went to Elizabeth City State, for us, it was an easier transition simply because the class sizes were a lot smaller, the professors were a lot more relatable, the student body as a whole was a lot more relatable as well. Well, when we transitioned to East Carolina University, the shock value, like, it was completely different. It was something completely new simply because you go from being a big fish in a little pond to being a little fish in a big pond. Right. So everything was different from the stage, from football playing to just being a student athlete, the expectations, the pride was a lot deeper with football at East Carolina as opposed to Elizabeth City State University, which is a part of the CIAA, and basketball was the breadwinner out there at that specific time.
Yeah, and then you've had a nice little career. What memories do you have? What games really stick out for you that you're most proud of it during your career?
Wow. There's a lot of them, but I'll say the very first, my sophomore year, me getting the opportunity to play occurred against West Virginia. And again, that was the first game that I actually got an opportunity to play special teams. So I was very appreciative. For that. We didn't win, but I was still out there. I also played a little bit of running back as well. The Virginia game was very important because that was my first true opportunity to showcase what I did offer to the Pirates. And last but not least, the championship game versus Tulsa. The Conference USA Championship in 2008 game against Tulsa was very memorable simply because, I helped to contribute to bringing home that first championship, which I like to believe helped us to win that other championship because the momentum was already rolling.
Very special. In fact, you read my mind there with the Tulsa game because, it had been a good number of years. People, Pirate fans may not remember, but before 2008, it was a number of years before we had won. We've been independent for so long, and we had been, I know the Liberty Bowl alliances and stuff like that, right before Conference USA, a lot of those teams that became Conference USA, we had a Liberty Bowl alliance. But I think you had to go all the way back to the Southern Conference in the late 70s, which was when I was really, really little, before you had a conference championship, right?
Absolutely, and see here the biggest so make no mistake, our bowl participation, we've won bowl games up until that point. We won big games up until that point. But to add on to what you just said, we're thinking championships, and for us to finally get over that hump to win a championship, a conference championship, that meant the world for us. it's been well documented that we've had some really strong teams, from the independent Peach Bowl team to the, you know, the Logan era to the Miami victory, you know, just before they went on their road to win the national championship. I mean, the list goes on and on, but only a select few can say that they helped contribute to a championship, you know. So I mean, that was bittersweet for us. Really was.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at 2008 and 2009, losing Coach Holtz to the USF was tough. Do you still keep in contact with Coach Holtz or any of the – I know you guys are – some of the players are very close still, right?
Well, so Coach Holtz is pretty tough to keep in contact with, but I do follow his moves. I mean, he is at Louisiana Tech right now. Coach Shankweiler, I do know that he is at JMU right now. But I do keep up with Joe Sloan. And Joe Sloan, he and I were teammates under Coach Holtz. Well, Joe Sloan is now the receivers coach with Coach Fitch out there at Louisiana Tech, you know. Of course, Shankweiler, you know, he was coaching at Tennessee for a little bit. So over the years, and I'm a part of coaching now, so the fraternity is relatively, you know, it's fairly short as it is. But as far as teammates, guys that I played with from top to bottom, inside and out, I do attempt to make an effort to at least see how guys are doing. And a number of the guys also return the favor as well.
But you were saying, coaching, where are you coaching now?
So I currently coach at Millbrook High School. This will be year two for me, and I'm loving it.
Is that the home of help me out? Is that the home of Reed Herring?
Yes, correct. Yes, Reed Herring. He played out here. Donovan Noel, right guard, who will also be contributing to the Pirates this upcoming year. He was a left tackle for us, phenomenal player. And we also sent Tyler Sneed, who was a receiver for us. He'll also be joining the Pirates as well up there.
You know, a lot of people, I love Holton Ahlers, but I think Reed Herring this year is going to surprise some people. Now is his time. He got his time, if you will. He's been patient, probably more patient than a lot of players these days in college sports. And now he gets his time to shine. What do you know Reed personally?
I did not have the opportunity to coach Reed at the time. I was at Wakefield High School. And
okay.
The quarterback that I was working with at a specific time, he's at North Carolina State in Matt McKay. But since moving to Millbrook, I've grown to learn Reed. I coached against him, and more often than not, I was on the opposite end of the game simply because, you know, him and the coaching staff did a phenomenal job with scheming us out. But every time he comes back to Millbrook, we hit it off. You know, we do talk. Matter of fact, during the spring game this year, as soon as the game was over with, I went to Ground Zero to speak with him, to speak with all the Millbrook guys, to, you know, love them up and all of that good stuff. But, I mean, Reed is a phenomenal guy. He's a competitor. He's cool under pressure. He's a really cool guy. He doesn't get rattled easily. And I feel he's a great addition for the Power program.
He's got a really good arm. I know that he only had one pass last year, and people are nervous about that. He's had a chance to learn Coach Montgomery's system, and looks like the three quarterbacks that we have in the stable, so to speak, looks good. I wanted to ask you before we let you go, what do you think about the Pirates this year? I know you follow the program, think pretty closely. What do you think the outlook's going to be for – I know you don't have a crystal ball, but – what do you think things will happen this year for the Pirates?
Well, based off of the personnel and based off of the continuity with the coaching staff and based off of the belief system, the strength and conditioning, I mean, I have and I might be in the minorities based off the experts, but I have the Pirates making it to a bowl game. And the reason why I say that with confidence is because I've attended practice, okay? I've went to the spring workouts. I've spoken with the coaches. I've spoken with the players. And what I see right now is what we've been missing for these past few years. Now, at the end of the day, you still have to take care of business, execute. But we have some quality pieces. We have some young pieces who want to be great, who come from winning programs, and from this upcoming team.
It's going to be tremendous. And, you know, this time of year, I'm extremely optimistic and certainly getting ready for the season. Well, that's why we're doing this show tonight and getting ready for it's hard to believe that the season will be here before you know it, but it seems like it feels like it should be here tomorrow. And I'm glad for the players, though, that I'm glad they have more time to, as fans, we'll just have to wait another month or so. And, Brandon, thank you so much. I appreciate everything that you've done for the Pirates. And please do us a favor and send us a whole bunch of great players from Millbrook, a nice pipeline from Raleigh down to Greenville.
Oh, absolutely. I do appreciate the invitation, and thank you for having me.
Always great to talk to Brandon Simmons. He was pumped up about the nostalgia party and really complimentary of us. So I want to give him a shout out. And he was actually tweeting about us. So, I mean, he was giving us a lot of love. So love Brandon Simmons and appreciate him, all that he did for the Pirates.
Yeah. When I think of Brandon Simmons, I think of the 2008 UTEP game where he just had the – he had him a ball game that day on senior day. He had the best game of his career, if I remember right. And,
four touchdowns, I believe.
Yeah. He had a great, great day. Running roughshod over the UTEP defense on Black Friday. That was a really good game.
I forgot about that. Yeah, he sure did. It's funny how many memories you have of all the – gosh, how many – between both of you, how many Pirate games do you think you've been to?
That'd be a good topic for another podcast. I can go back and look in the fact book and figure it up. But I know the most games I've ever been to in a season was 10, and that was sometime during the Skip Holtz era. Maybe it was 06, but it was somewhere around in there, 06, 07, and I went to 10 ball games.
Well, you know, growing up, my parents weren't Pirates. I became a Pirate on my own in 95. I was my first.
So
yeah, 87 for you.
86, well close, 86, but who's counting?
I went to my first East Carolina game when I became a fan in 94, actually, South Carolina game. That's another story for another time, but on the road. But I first East Carolina game I went to in person was 96, against Southern Miss on Thursday night. Not a good first game to finally get to go to in person. Ooh. After being a fan from 94 when I was 14, and then 96, I was finally my first game in person at 16. And the Thursday night game against Southern Miss was brutal.
I remember that, 28-0 at halftime.
Yeah, and then I went periodically throughout the late 90s and started going every single game in my early 20s when my wife was a student at East Carolina and got the student tickets. And we've been going ever since. So ever since the 03 season with when she was a student, and then ever since she graduated, we've been season ticket holders after that. So how many games I've been to, I'd have to count them up, but a lot, not compared to a lot of the guys that are older than me, or Bubba, who was raised a Pirate by his dad. But
he was 6 weeks old and he went to his first game, right, Bubba?
I'm sorry.
Six weeks old when you went to your first game?
Pretty much. A little bit older than that because I was born on June the 7th, but yeah, not much. I guess I would have been about 3 months, but yeah, pretty much whoever we played first in 1981.
Well, see, I can't say
that. Bubba was actually there for that 83 season. That's crazy when you think about it. He don't remember it, but that is actually kind of funny when you think Bubba experienced the 83 season.
Absolutely.
And just to show you how far things have come, obviously we're spoiled these days with the exposure and the coverage we get with social media. Because even thinking back to the mid to late 90s, it was a struggle at times to get East Carolina news in the western part of the state and follow games. You'd be going to sports bars and trying to pull it up via satellite and stuff, and that wasn't always the easiest thing to do. But thinking back, like you're saying, to the early 80s, that Ed Emery era, that's what I remember. I was 2, 3, 4 years old those years. And then I remember my dad and my grandfather and my dad's dad was over, and they were doing some painting, and we were playing out at Missouri, and I just remember my mom was going in and out doing different errands, and every time she would come in, my dad's like, he's like, "Were you able to find out a score? Were you able to find out a score?" Of course, that was the game. I think we won 13-6 out in Columbia. So
you remember that when you were three?
Actually two, but
my goodness, yeah. Wow, I cannot remember anything when I was two. That is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, we can reminisce. Next podcast, by the way, we're going to do our top five Adam Sandler movies. We'll do that on the next podcast. We're running out of time. Until next time, for Bubba Rosenbaum and Kyle from LaGrange Barber, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.